Welcome to episode 100 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. So, here we are then, the 100th edition of the show, falling on the very last day of 2012. Now, I still can't believe that we've reached this landmark already, but I guess, you know, the weeks just roll by and one thing leads to another. So, as it is a bit of a special occasion, I thought we'd have a slightly longer outing this time around. In recent weeks, you'll know that I asked for suggestions about just what this show should be centred around. All things considered, what follows is a whistle-stop Q&A session in which I'm addressing some of the most frequently asked questions that I've received through the year. So, let's just get on with it, shall we? Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 100. Right then, in front of me I have a list of 12 questions, and they're in no particular order, but they are to do with, as you would expect, photography, the active photographer in specifically. They also concern the outdoor activities that I am involved in, and just general things that concern, as you would imagine, what I do day to day. So, the first question out of the hat is, what is your favourite photograph that you have taken? Well, this is maybe not the easiest question to start with, because there isn't an immediate answer. My favourite photograph that I have ever taken, I could say, is the one that I haven't taken yet, because of course we're always striving to take the best pictures we can to push ourselves as photographers. But more realistically, I'd have to say that although I don't have a favourite photograph, all of those that I take that provoke an instant reaction, that is always my photograph of the moment, as it were. And when I say an instant reaction, you know, I can shoot hundreds, thousands of pictures over the course of a day, for example. And they're all nice. They're, you know, you have some that you particularly like, some that you think, nah, you know, that's going to miss out in the edit for whatever reason. But every now and then, sometimes more frequently than others, you will line up a shot. It might be, I know, someone running towards you. It might be something flying through the air, a bike or something, or a car coming around a corner, or whatever it might be. And you'll press the button, and you will just know in that instant that you have got the shot that you want. So any time that I get that reaction, that is a shot that I am particularly happy with. Now, there are certain pictures that spring to mind that I've shot, which I am particularly happy with. But again, it comes down to that moment that, you know, I'm just really happy with the picture that I've shot. The second question is, who is your favourite photographer, either historical or contemporary? Well, if you've listened to the Active Photographer podcast regularly, or if you've followed my sort of conversations with people or articles I've written, you'll know that, generally speaking, I don't... Now, let me rephrase this. I very much like the work of a lot of contemporary photographers, but what I find most inspiring are the older photographers, the what you might call the classical photographers. So, for example, modern day photographers, I like Joe McNally. I think he's a very talented photographer. I think in the technical sense, especially when it comes to lighting and constructing his photographs, I think, you know, we all have a lot to learn from him. For those of you who don't know, I should probably say all these things I'm talking about, where appropriate, I will put links in the show notes. But Joe McNally, National Geographic, Sports Illustrated, you know, he shoots for these people. Very highly regarded photographer. But when I'm looking for inspiration, and you'll know that I have written pieces and recorded podcasts about this in the past, you'll know that it's people like Eugène Ager or Henri Cartier-Bresson, for example, that I find most inspiring. And I don't... It's not necessarily that they are even a favourite photographer. It might be that a particular picture by a particular photographer is something that I remember. It's memorable for whatever reason. It might be the subject matter that they've captured particularly well. It might be the lighting. Sometimes I'll hold that in the back of my mind as a reference point for a shoot, or I might myself take a picture and I'll look at it. I'll think, yeah, that really kind of reminds me, by accident perhaps, of I don't know, a street scene that Eugène Ajay or Bressay or one of these other photographers has shot. So it's not necessarily other photographers that I look to, because I'm always looking at contemporary photographers. Tom Boll is someone who I've looked at recently. You'll know that I've spoken about him. He's an adventure sports photographer. As you can imagine, that's an area which is particularly of interest to me. But his pictures resonate for different reasons. Excuse me. So again, all the photographers, all the photographs, the imagery that I like, the reason I like it is because they strike a chord and they inspire me to take nice, strong pictures myself. The next question is, if you could choose only one lens to use for the rest of your life, what would it be? And this is an age-old question. And it doesn't just apply to photography in that sense. You know, you could say to any sort of craftsman or an artist or a musician, for example, a musician who plays, say, 12 different instruments. Say, right, what's your favourite instrument? If you could only use one for the rest of your life, what would it be? It's very tricky because these are tools of the job. And so if I'm shooting a particular scene, it might call for an ultra-wide angle lens. It might call for a really big telephoto lens to draw the action in. It really varies, but I think I'm going to sit on the fence on this one and suggest two lenses. But bear in mind what I've just said, that it really does depend on context. So my first choice would be a pretty old and battered by now, but still very, very nice lens. I shoot on Nikon. It's the 80-200 f2.8 EDIF-AFS, to give it its full name. It is a lovely sharp lens, nice and bright at f2.8, good for capturing the action. What I like about that lens is that there is flexibility within it. Yes, it is a telephoto lens, but being a zoom, it means that I've got the 80mm wider view, but then I've got the 200 telephoto. Now, to give you an example of how this has particularly been flexible for me in the past, I always remember many years ago I was shooting for a magazine called Wavelength, which is a surfing magazine, at an event which is no longer going. It's called the White Air Extreme Sports Festival, and it was held at the Isle of Wight at that time. And the Isle of Wight, for those that don't know, is just off the south coast here in the UK. And we were shooting the surfing, and we were shooting from one of the piers or something, just along the coastline at least. And there were some photographers there with sort of 400mm lenses, 500mm lenses, fixed focus. And I was shooting on the 80-200 2.8, and I had a 2x converter, so essentially doubling the pulling power, and there is a slight markup to the lens setup that I have. So rather than it being 160-400, it's more like, I haven't worked it out for a while. It's about 1.6x conversion rate, so you can obviously, you know, work it out from there. But one thing I noticed, that as the surfers were coming in across certain waves, obviously you're trying to capture a sequence, and sometimes it happens that the surfer will do, you know, the maneuver that they're doing closer to you than at other times. And I was watching these various photographers, and my colleagues there, and you know, they were shooting on these bigger lens, and there came a point, as you would imagine, that the surfer was actually too close to them, albeit that they're still quite a distance away, but the surfer was too close to them for their cameras to be able to focus. Whereas with me shooting on the 80-200, I was able to zoom out a little bit, and that allowed me to carry on shooting some series of extra frames, which my fellow photographers were not able to get. So for that reason, it's a really it's a really flexible lens. And with the 2x converter, you do lose a bit of light. You have to bear that in mind. But, you know, with good light and what have you, it's lovely. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, one of my other favourite lenses is, again, a Nikon lens. It's a 35mm f1.8G AFS lens. And this is a lovely little lens. It's really bright. It's, you know, fairly wide angle. Sometimes I just want to be working, given my working distance, with a really light setup for a mid-range or sort of a wide angle to mid-range lens. there are advantages shooting with a prime lens, as we call them, that being a lens which doesn't vary its focal length. And some of these reasons are, traditionally people would say that they are sharper than a zoom lens. They're quicker, i.e. the maximum aperture is on this is 1.8, so it's letting lots of light in. But it's just a really nice lightweight lens, and in a in a real world application sense, what it means is that because you're not zooming, you're having to work around the subject, move forward, move back, really work that subject to get the best out of it. And as a portrait lens, it's really nice because you can step back a bit and have a bit more of the surroundings in there. So it might be someone sat on some steps, or someone on a hillside, or you might want to be showing a mountain biker with the hills or the valley in the background. So if you just step back a little bit, you can get that in without it being super super wide angle. But then it's got a fairly close I forget exactly, but it's got a close focusing distance, not a macro lens as such, i.e. designed for super close focusing, but it does allow you to get nice and close. So for example, I could shoot at, well, let's say f1.8. The depth of field, the amount of focus in front of and behind the subject matter is so narrow on that. So if I wanted to, I could just be just a very short distance away from my subject, focus on their eyes, and literally everything, like if you imagine the depth from someone's eyes to their ears, before you get to their ears, the focus has dropped off, and that can be a really effective kind of approach for engaging portraits. And you know, it depends how you treat them. If you convert the pictures to black and white and they're kind of quite moody and what have you, it can just work really well, especially with natural light or with flashlight, which is done very subtly, so it doesn't immediately shout flash. But again, with both of those lenses, sometimes I'm just in the mood to shoot with that telephoto, and I love having it in my hand, and I love just walking around, say, at an event or a location. But, you know, they are tools. That is exactly it. So can I make a decision? I think I would probably have to say that I would pick the 35mm just because it has more general purpose, because you can be wider and going closer. But it's a tough call. So next question, jumping on to sort of a more general question about the podcast. The question is, do you have professional experience of broadcasting, i.e. college radio, hospital radio, or anything like that? Well, the simple answer is no. No, I don't. the story goes, and a lot of you may not know this, how I came to do the podcast. I going back into sort of 2009, 2010, but mainly 2010, I had been asked a number of times by a number of people to appear either on their own podcasts, which are not were not necessarily about photography. They were just everything from comedy podcasts, like just chat. Someone asked me to talk on theirs, which is about business tips and being in a, you know, being a business person and what have you. And I did this a couple of times. I really enjoyed it. I've always liked listening to what you'd call spoken words. So before we had podcasts as we know them now, I always liked listening to the radio or things like that. And so I did this a few times and I thought, you know, I really like the format. And I didn't have any prior experience of putting together any sort of an audio presentation. And at that time, I was thinking about my blog as it was back then. And at that time, it wasn't The Active Photographer. It was something else. And it was just a blog where I wrote and posted pictures. And I thought, okay, well, as a marketing tool and a way to share my message, that kind of really appeals. So I kind of looked into it a bit and it kind of just took off from there, really. I set up a WordPress site, which is what The Active Photographer is based on currently. And I just did a test and uploaded it and tried that. And you know, maybe I could go into this more in the future, just to let those people that don't know sort of the full story. But it just started from there. It was purely, I liked the medium. I'm a pretty, you probably will know this if you've listened for long enough. You'll know that I'm quite a private person. I don't talk a lot about my private life. There's some things that people just don't need to be privy to, as stuff to do with my family and what have you. It's no one's concern but ours. But I am happy to talk to people and share information. And that's what I love about the Active Photographer, is that I'm able to do that. And I suppose at first it was kind of, you know, you think, well, who's going to be listening? And of course, there wasn't an audience as such. There was the audience from my podcast, from my written blog. But I was thinking quite differently about things as I am now, but that's just how I came to do the podcast. I have no professional qualifications as such. I suppose what it comes down to, those of you, you know, you're listening. If you're a regular listener, I would therefore assume that you must like what you hear, and then I get the feedback. People say they like it, and that encourages me to continue, and I take on board what people tell me and ask for and what have you. And that just pushes the show forward, and I'm learning all the time. A bit like with photography or any creative art, you never stop learning, because you think, oh, that looks interesting, I'll try that, or I wonder how I can use this technique or what have you. So it's a real kind of sort of from the ground up approach, and that's just how I came to do the podcast. No experience, just me talking into a microphone once a week, and that was it. The next question relates actually to the podcast, and the question is, what's the most interesting thing that's happened to you because of the podcast? And I think for me, it would have to be last year, as I record this, that would have been 2011. And a lot of you know I have connections with Manfrotto. And I imagine most of you know, but for those that don't, Manfrotto are a very experienced manufacturer of tripods, monopods. They've now branched into apparel, so clothing, photography vests, bags, that sort of thing, photography luggage. So they're a good, solid company, and I've used, even before I had their connection with them, I have used their kit for a very long time, and it was only through the test and review activities through the site that I got in touch with them and what have you. So off the back of that, the most interesting thing that I reckon, certainly in the last couple of years, that springs to mind immediately, because of course there's been lots of exciting stuff, it was when Manfrotto asked me to go out to Berlin with them to do some podcast recording and do some write-ups and what have you about what they called their factory event, which was, and again, I'll put the links in the show notes, but it was basically these pop-up displays where people could get involved. They had a photo booth. They could sort of sort of mess around in front of the camera. They could look at the equipment, the tripods. They could ask questions. I think there were competitions there and all this sort of thing. And they did this in Berlin and they did one in London. You'll know that I was at Covent Garden and doing a similar thing up there. And where else did they? They did it at various places around the world. But that, I think, is so far that is, you know, directly off the back of the podcast was when Manfrotto asked me to go out to Berlin. That was just brilliant. I had such a good time. And, you know, they were happy with what I produced. you as a listener, you know, I've had good feedback about the shows that I put together. So, yeah, the most interesting thing, I think, has been that. As I say, there's been lots of other things. There have been places I've been invited to go and make recordings. I always enjoy every year at Focus on Imaging going there and doing my industry interviews, which was just off my own back. But it's nice to see what happens from year to year, what new developments there are. And again, it's just working with the contacts that I have within the photography industry, same with the outdoor industry, some of the trade shows that I go to. Again, I, you know, really interesting. I find it interesting. I know that I get good feedback. People love those live reports. But yeah, you know, it's a number of things, but certainly the Manfrotto trip was, I suppose, was a highlight from 2011. We now move on to camping, because, you know, I'm obviously, as you would imagine, very keen on camping and the outdoors. And the question is, what's your favourite type of place to camp? Well, the quick answer is, so long as I'm in the outdoors, I'm happy. I don't really care what the weather's doing. I don't care whether it's nice and warm and balmy summer's evening or if it's below zero, as is often the case. But my favourite place to camp, I would immediately say woodland or like a glade area. I just find, as you know, I'm often out in woodland, and if it's an ancient woodland, then all the better. But I just find it very sort of grounding. I find that I'm very grounded when I go to woodland, and it's very peaceful, allows me to think about things and again, be inspired and what have you. And that essentially is what it comes down to in terms of locations generally, and especially with camping. Anywhere that has scenery which inspires me to get up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning, ready for a sunrise, for example, knowing that there's lovely hills in the distance with the sun coming up, or if I'm out there shooting pictures with people, with my subjects, with clients, what have you, it's nice to visualize. If you know this, for example, this amazing sunset is coming up, it means that we have to be up at 5:30 or 5 o'clock, but you get that lovely rich light that you only get at certain times of day. It just makes it all worth it. So for myself, just camping with no other agenda other than to just enjoy the camping for what it is, which I've got to be honest is a little bit tricky because I always don't like to miss any photo opportunities if I've got my camera with me, which I invariably do. So whether it's for personal enjoyment or whether it's for work, then yeah, woodland or anywhere that's just a really nice location that I feel relaxed and inspired in. The next question is quite simple. Where did you get your hat? Now, if this doesn't mean anything to you, I would suggest that maybe you scroll through some previous posts or articles that I've put up on the site, and you will know that in a great many of the pictures which feature me, usually when I'm on location shooting an event or just some sort of a shoot, you will know that I wear a hat. And most usually in the autumn and winter, it's a beanie hat. And people have sent me messages saying, I really like your hat. Now, to look at it, it's nothing special insofar as that it's like a, you know, a sort of a super expensive high couture kind of sort of thing. Basically, I wanted a new hat, and my wife is a textile historian. Some of you may or may know, may or may not know that. She is also an extremely good knitter, and the hat in question is made out of some very nice wool, it has to be said. But essentially what I did is I gave my wife a JPEG of my logo that I use. And if you look at the top of the Active Photographer, you will see the logo, which is a hand-drawn camera symbol, very quickly hand-drawn. That's the basis of it. And my wife put this through some fancy program that she's got, and it basically then told her, essentially working to a grid system, as it were, or a set of reference. I don't understand it all, it's far too clever for me, but it, you know, working to some sort of instruction, it told her where to, you know, how to knit this pattern. And so essentially, the thing that people like about my hat is not so much the hat, because it is just a fairly plain hat. They like the pattern, and in a getting your brand out there sense, that's what they are noticing. They are noticing my logo every time I appear in these pictures or in a video or what have you. So where did I get my hat? I got it from my wife, because she's brilliant and she made it for me. The design is completely unique. There's not another one like it. And that's probably not surprising, because no one else would really want to wear it, seeing as it's my logo and what have you. But there we go. That's how it came about. next question. How long have you had Office Cat? And how does he like the limelight? So another thing, and we will get back onto photography and the outdoors in a minute. You probably know we have two cats. One of them is called Penfold and one of them is called Socks. And they were both rescue cats. And they basically, Socks doesn't do a lot. We refer to him as Studio Cat, and Penfold we refer to as Office Cat. And Pen is always hanging around with me, most usually in the office. For example, if I get up to go and make a cup of tea, I'll come back and he's taken up my seat and I'm too soft to kind of want to move him. I'm just a bit of a softy. My wife got these guys some years ago, long before we were together. And then, so basically when we started seeing each other, and so the cats basically adopted me around the time that my wife and I were first going out. It's nice. I mean, hopefully you get the sense with the Active Photographer as a website. As I said before, I don't talk a lot about my personal life. I don't feel a real need to. But, you know, the Active Photographer is behind the scenes of my life as a photographer and all the things that kind of come about. And if there's something that's a little bit lighthearted and, let's face it, the majority of us, we all love animals, and especially cats and dogs and what have you. From time to time, I'll take a picture of Pen, Office Cat, and And people react to that. I've had people send me messages saying, I love seeing the Office Cat updates. So who knows, maybe I'll get round to putting a special section on the site just for him. I don't know. But that's how long you know, I've had the cats, and say my wife for some years before I had them, before she was with me, and that's the story. So getting back to photography, the question is, what's your favourite time of day to shoot pictures? Well, it probably won't come as much of a surprise to a lot of you that I love nighttime for photography. I like dusk. I love sort of early morning. I don't do so much in early morning, unless it's particularly to do with the sunrise. But certainly, you know, those last few hours as the sun is setting, and then going on into the evening, into the night, sometimes into the early hours. The reason for this is I think there's just something really, really special about the quality of light that you kind of only get. You can always kind of, you can imitate the quality of light, of course. You can use light modifiers, you can bounce light around, you can adjust your exposure, you can use flashlights or torch light, or all these different things to kind of, in varying ways and varying situations and varying degrees, to replicate the same sort of look or feeling. But nothing for me beats being out at, say for example, in the summer, at sort of half nine, between sort of half nine and half 11 at night, with the camera on a tripod, so the camera is rock steady, you're able to shoot at the low ISOs, at ISO 100 or 200, long exposures, you can get some movement in there if you want, but then you can start to play around, you can have fun with your photography, and that of course is what it's all about. You can visualize a striking image, and you can combine techniques, so you could have a long exposure, for example, with a burst of flashlight, if you've got a subject in the picture. You could have, for example, star trails are always popular. So for example, I could be on a hillside photographing a tent, and I could have the tent lit by just a torch or a lamp or something inside, so it's just creating a glow of the tent. But so that works well with that, but then with a slightly longer exposure, or considerably longer depending on your setup, you then get these star trails, which essentially is showing the movement of the stars across the night sky. And a lot of people say, well, how is that possible? And as I say, I know I have a wide ranging audience. Some of you will know immediately the answer to this. Others, it will be something that you've thought about or want to try or just don't know. It's the same with car trails. And so the lights on cars. If you imagine you've got a car going down a road and you've got buildings there, and you're using an exposure of say 5 seconds, the buildings are not moving, so they are going to record absolutely sharp. You know, you work out your exposure, the buildings will be lovely and sharp, and that's basically it. The cars are moving and the light creates a trace across through the picture. And that movement, the movement of the light, that records. It's the same with star trails. The tent is, for example, is absolutely still if it's a lovely still night, but the stars are moving as we view them. The stars are moving, so you get this swirling kind of movement of the stars in the sky. That's how it works. So there's so much you can do at nighttime or in the last hours of day. And you can have so much fun, whether it's in the high streets, whether it's in a quiet suburban road, or if it's in the middle of a field, or on a hillside, or up a mountainside. It doesn't matter. That the possibilities are fantastic at nighttime, and then that's why I love nighttime so much. Next question, very simply, film or digital? And this relates to what is my preference. And I've got to be honest, a lot of you will know that I grew up shooting film long before digital was a thing. So you had to be sure to get the results at the time. And I shot film commercially, so especially having to be sure of getting the pictures that you were trying to get and that the client wanted. I then went digital, and I'll be absolutely honest, I do prefer digital. There are a number of reasons. I mean, I haven't shot film commercially for a good while now. The most obvious reason why I prefer digital, in fact, there are two reasons. One, I think the quality of digital is so good now that if I was to shoot film, it's not commercially viable. And the quality of digital is so good that the clients aren't going to know the difference in the most part. And frankly, they're probably not going to care whether it's shot on film or digital, because they just want to watch their pennies and make sure that they're getting good value for money and getting the results they want. But perhaps more importantly, I'll be honest, the beauty of digital has always been that you get that instant confirmation of whether or not you've got the result you want, and you can check the picture, and it takes the worry, the anxiety, if there is a situation where it's particularly tense, you know, you can be sure that you've got the results. And as long as your memory cards don't corrupt, and as long as you back up your pictures, either in the field or as soon as you get back to the office or whatever, it's just such a good thing that you can see. That was always a thing that people wished that they could have, was an instant confirmation that they've got the pictures. So the simple answer is, yep, I prefer digital. And, you know, it's just the way we work now. It's the accepted technology that we use, and you have to embrace it. I was fairly late coming to digital by comparison to some of my colleagues. But, you know, once you see it, you just don't turn back. I now shoot film and plan to shoot film more for myself, and thinking more creatively and using old cameras and maybe processing some film from time to time. And, you know, just to because I love photography and I've always loved the process. So that's something that I would be using film cameras for, but certainly not commercially really now. The next question is, what is your favourite piece of outdoor kit? I think this breaks down into two sub-categories. One I would class as outdoor, as in purely outdoors equipment. So things like clothing and rucksacks and tents and shoes and boots and all this sort of thing. The other would be photography kit that is designed for being outdoors, as opposed to, say, being in a studio. And quite simply, my favourite piece of outdoor kit is anything which keeps me comfortable when I'm out on location. So, for example, it could be a waterproof coat. A lot of you will know that I reviewed the Paramo Velez Adventure Smock, which was an amazing, and still is an amazing, smock jacket. And I'll link to my review in the show notes. You should definitely check it out. That has been up mountainsides, below ground. It's just kept me dry. It's kept me comfortable because if you use a layering system to make sure that your temperature is regulated and you keep the rain off and the snow. I mean, it's such an amazing piece of clothing. I can't fault it. It's been lovely. But then there are things like the tent that I use. I've had the same tent for a long time. Actually going to be testing some tents over this coming year in 2013. So on some location shoots. So watch out for those. But I've got a North Face tent, which I've had for many, many years. And it just keeps on going. It's quite heavyweight, and it's just brilliant. The stove that I use when I'm camping and I need to cook food and make tea, I use a Trangia stove, which is a Metz burner stove. It just keeps on going. Again, it's like so much, and I hark on about this all the time. If you get good kit and you look after it and you know what's expected from it, and you know how to use it in different situations, it just keeps on going. There does come a point where you have to upgrade and you have to, you know, look to replacing it perhaps, or you know, moving on. That's not a bad thing. It's a natural progression. But any item that keeps me comfortable in the outdoors, that is a favourite. So it's quite a broad answer, I guess. In terms of photographic, currently, and I've got a number of things on the in line for test and review in the coming months and what have you, but one of my favourite items, certainly from this last year, was the Lowepro Photosport 200AW rucksack, which was, and still is such a lovely little lightweight rucksack designed to take some of your outdoor gear, some of your photography gear. And they've got, they've since brought out other bags. One of the bags I'm going to be looking at very shortly, and in fact I already have it in my possession, I just haven't released any sneaky peek yet, but that is something I am going to be doing in coming days. Might be a video, might be a write-up, not sure yet. But that is the, again, a Lowepro. What is it now? It's the Rover Pro 45LAW, I think. I will link to it actually in the show notes. I'm pretty certain it's the Rover Pro 45L rucksack. It's designed to take like two camera bodies, a series of lenses, flash, a tripod, and your camping gear, your tent, your sleeping bag, all the rest of it. I'm really excited to be giving that a go. But certainly the Photosport small rucksack you should really have a look. If you want a really lightweight rucksack that looks more like a rucksack than a camera bag, so it's quite subtle, that you can take out onto the hill and be comfortable through the day. So I tested it through a number of months through the year, and it was just brilliant. As you know, with all my tests and reviews, they are very down to earth, very honest. If I don't like a product, I will say. I'm not under any pressure from manufacturers to say good things. You know that, and I won't name names, but there have been items over this past year that I've reviewed and I've said they are over-engineered. They have flaws to them. They don't work as they should. But this was one where I think that in the most part, they've got it spot on, and I loved it. I think it's well worth a look. So the final question, which I pulled out here, which I'm going to end on, relates to the podcast as a whole. And the question is, what is your process for putting together the podcast, and how long does it take? And I'll keep it fairly short. The way that I put the podcast together is very simple. I use a little recording device that is made by a company called Roland. It's called the Edirol R09HR. Lovely little MP3 and WAV file recorder. And I basically take that with me, as you know, out on location, or if I'm in the office, or if I'm doing an interview. Everything is recorded on that. Sometimes if I'm driving along, what have you, I have a little clip-on microphone so that I'm working hands-free, and that's how I'm able to shoot pictures and talk my way through, so I have my hands free. So basically, I record an activity, wherever that may be. When I'm in the office, I will sit in front of the computer, and obviously I'll transfer that file onto the computer, but I will then listen back to it. I'll record an introduction and an outro for the show, and I will put that. It's a very simple process, actually. I can visualize how it goes together. You have the sound bed, the introductory music, which then fades out. The introduction that I've recorded goes in. The music fades up and then out, and you have the main feature of the show. Then you have the outro with the music in the background. That fades out, and that's the end of the show. That all in takes, aside from the actual recording of the main music, the main on location or whatever feature, the process of putting the whole podcast together takes about an hour. And sometimes it's less than that, but by the time I've uploaded it, it's about an hour. Sometimes it takes a bit longer. I obviously then have to have a picture to go with the show notes, and that gets uploaded as well. But all in, for a typical 30-minute show, and of course this is a longer show on this occasion because it's the special occasion, a 30-minute show takes about an hour to put together and to put to bed. And then it goes live, and it's scheduled usually for a minute past midnight on a Monday morning. That's UK time. So if you are listening from the States, for example, you you get in there a bit earlier. And of course, the podcast goes out via syndication in various places and iTunes and all the rest of it. But that's how it works. It's a very simple process. And the software that I use is called Audacity. I'll put a link in the show notes. And it's a free piece of software. I've tried other software which I've paid for, either for download or bought the software that either comes with a recording device or you buy it off the shelf. But Audacity, for my purposes and for my use, works really, really well. It goes back to my usual thing that I always hark on about, you know, don't complicate things. If the equipment does the job and everyone's happy, both yourself and the people that you're supplying that product, that work for, if everyone is happy, that's the important thing. So I've got a good audio recorder. That's the starting point. But the software that I use is really, really simple. I can put the podcast together anywhere. I could do it on location, say, for example, through a laptop. I can do it in my office on a desktop machine. It's just a really simple approach, really simple setup. So thank you very much for your questions. I hope that has answered them sufficiently. And that is basically it, because I just wanted to pick a few out that kind of cover a lot of the most common questions that people ask me over or have asked me over the last 100 episodes, whether it's be on sort of online or in person. People have asked me, and you know, I'm always happy to ask to answer as I go along. But you know, I thought it'd make a nice little topic, a Q&A session for this special episode. So as I say, I hope that has answered your questions, and I look forward to answering more of them in the many, many weeks and months that are lined up in 2013. So again, thank you very much for those questions, and I look forward to talking to you next year. I just want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who has taken the time to support The Active Photographer up to this point. Now, of course, it may sound quite cliched, but it really is true that your input does make a difference. And, you know, I'm just really glad that you like what you see and hear on the website. But remember, as ever, I'm open to suggestions. So always please do feel free to run ideas past me. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great new year, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.